an aspect of the significance of Sukkot, why it is that we read Kohelet, what that has to do with the cycle of the year that we are in right now, which is coming off of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, and even more importantly, try to bring it a little bit into understanding a drop, tip-tiponet, about Hoshana Rabbah and Shmini Atzeret, which is really where we are exactly at this moment. I know that Rabbi Twersky spoke about Kohelet, and I'm sure Kohelet has come up. I hope I will be taking a little bit of a different vantage point. As we all know, there is Shivim Panim LaTorah. There is no one right way, and there are definitely various aspects of understanding why it is that we learn and what the various understandings of Kohelet can be altogether. What is most obvious to everybody, though, when you look at Kohelet, is the level of expression of frustration with the idea of Amelut. And if you look at the very first source, we actually read a few of these psukim, or at least I said over a few of these psukim to you at the beach. So I feel like we have a little bit of a continuation. I didn't even know I was going to be speaking about this now. So I'm happy. I, at the time, gave you a little bit of a background in terms of the cycle of life, how it is that we can look at the first few psukim of Kohelet from a positive vantage point, and not only from a negative vantage point. But nonetheless, if we were to look at these first few psukim in Kohelet, Pasuk Gimel and Dalet and Pasuk Yud Aleph, we do see, on the pshat level, this statement of frustration with attempting to succeed in this world. Pasuk Gimel, Ma Yitron La'adam B'chol Amalo She'ya'amol Tachat HaShemesh, Dor Holech V'dor Ba V'Ha'aretz La'olam Omadet. On the very simplest level, we understand that there is a statement here of a person who looks at their deeds and says, what is the gain, what is the purpose of the work, of the toil that happens underneath the sun? A generation comes and a generation goes, and yet the earth still stands, okay? And what it is that we had said at the time was that as a human being who is at the top of the chain of all organisms, we can't really rationalize and understand how it's possible that we that have all of these strengths and understanding and intelligence and abilities, right? We, at the end of the day, at Me'av Esrom, we always say, we die, right? We die and we ultimately disintegrate and we ultimately no longer exist. And yet, if you take the tree that's outside, in Israel it's not such a good example, the tree, because the state didn't have so many trees because the land was shomema, but you go to California, you go to places where they have 100, 200,000 year oak trees, right? Anybody ever been to Yosemite and whatnot, and you really understand, like, it's basically been the same. You know, they talk about the separation of the African rift that we are part of in Israel, and, you know, if you're not dealing with problems of evolution, et cetera, millions of years old, v'ha'aretz l'olam omadet. And yet, if I were to throw out certain names, Yosef Mendelevich, anybody over 40 is not allowed to raise their hand. Who knows who Yosef Mendelevich is? Woo! I'm so excited. Chicago girls, you must have... How do you know? What? Oh, okay. Well, share with the girls. Why am I asking you about Yosef Mendelevich? Who is he?
He's a Russian refusenik.
Does anybody here know what a... Please tell me everybody here knows what a refusenik is.
No.
Oh, I'm going to cry. Oh, that's quite a circus. Okay, Mom, what's a refusenik?
Well, there was... Jews wanted to leave Russia, and the Russians... time in the Soviet Union where they wouldn't let Russians out.
Okay, now we are not going to age ourselves, but we are not talking about the 1920s. We are talking about the 60s, 70s, right? We are talking about a normal time of life. We are not going back. I can't believe you guys don't know refuseniks. Okay, we're going to have to do something about Jewish history and whatnot. But there was the fall of the Iron Curtain after World War II, and the Iron Curtain meant that in the former Soviet Union, which is now Russia, Ukraine, etc., Jews wanted to leave. Jews wanted to live as Jews, and they weren't able to. And when they requested to leave, what happened was that their money was confiscated, and if it wasn't confiscated, their businesses were closed, and they were followed by the KGB. Everybody knows what the KGB is. You've all read Mysteries, okay, Baruch Hashem, at least something, right? So you know, whatever it is that they tried to do, they were no longer allowed to succeed. Now, why am I being entertaining about this little thing? Dor Holeh V'Dor Ba, Ba'aretz Olam Omedet. Somebody like Yosef Mendelovich, everybody's heard of Natan Sharansky because he came to Israel and because he got involved. I mean, so is Yosef Mendelovich, but he got involved in politics, etc., etc. But these people that less than 30 years ago were Moser Nefesh sat in jails. Right? There's I have to tell the story. There's a story about Yosef Mendelovich that when he understood what he had missed out on, right, learning Torah, he was put in jail. So somebody was able to bring into him I don't know if it was smuggled, if they didn't know, one Masechet of Gemara. Right? He wanted to learn Torah. I can't get to Eretz Yisrael, I want to learn Torah. And he learned over and over and over, and he knew this one and this is a real true story, heard it from him himself. He had learned everything that there was to learn that he had in front of him. And he said to himself, wow, one day when I get my freedom, it's going to be unbelievable. I am going to meet Jews. And the opportunities that they will have had that I will not have had in terms of learning, everybody is going to know. Every Jew, right? Aren't they going to know? If I only learned one Masechet, people for sure are going to know everything. I'm going to be able to learn so much from people outside. And there was a level of disappointment. Because when he was released and he came to Eretz Yisrael, and still we're talking about Eretz Yisrael, we're not even talking about Chutz La'aretz, where it's even harder to find larger populations of people who are fully focused on, you know, wanting to accomplish in Torah. And it doesn't mean you can't do other things. We can also do other things. Because the point is that if you use all your free time, Bagita Bayom and Balayla, and there are times when you're not working and there are times when you're not sleeping, and if you want to accomplish, right, you can accomplish. He couldn't believe that people who had freedom, that they didn't learn in their spare time, right? He calculated all the minutes, all the hours, and he said, how can it be? Anyways, that's a side story because we're supposed to learn all night long. But the point is that he's a gadol. He's a gadol hador. You guys, okay, you don't even know who he is. Now, it's not your fault, maybe. School's fault, I don't know. But dor holeh v'dor ba. We live in a world that, yes, you may know who Einstein is, but for every Einstein, there were dozens of other scientists and inventors. And take any particular field, you're going to know who Marx is, right? There's philosophers. There are people who we don't know who have impacted in our lives in ways we will never understand. Dor holeh v'dor ba. So therefore, what Kohelet is saying here is to a certain extent true. That even though we will spend our lives doing really, really important things, being Moser Nefesh, whether it be for Torah, whether it be for science, whether to be to build the world, it doesn't make a difference. There is something about the nature of the physical world and the way that we live within the physical world that here today, gone tomorrow, that there is a forgetfulness of what it is that we have accomplished. Now, once we say that, we're like, thanks, Mrs. Katz, we're supposed to be happy. You just made me sad, right? Leave it to Mrs. Katz to, you know, put a little bit of a damper in things, so we gotta, you know, build it up. But we know, we have to be honest, and therefore, when you look at Kohelet, he's not making it up. It's really true. Let's see what he says in Perek Bet. Pasuk Yudchet. V'saneti ani et kol amali sha'ani amel tachat ha-shamesh. I hate it. That's very interesting, because there aren't too many places in the Torah and the Tanakh where we see the language of hate, and this is a parak which is very full of very emotional words. We're not going to get into it, but very strong language. Sha'ani chenu la'adam sheyihia acharai. Umi yodeh hachacham yeo sachal v'yishlaf v'chol amali sha'amalti. U'shachach mati tachat ha'shemesh gam zahavel. That what bothers him here, and we're not going to go through each example, that here it is that I've worked my whole life, and at a certain point, I have to leave it to someone else. That can mean an inheritance. Right here it is that I built, and this is unfortunately a very common cycle if anybody keeps up with, I don't know, in my day it was People Magazine, is it still People Magazine, whatever it is, you have the very wealthy millionaire, the entrepreneur who succeeded, and you have the son who's the, what's a nice way to say it, the guy who's doing all the things that he's not supposed to be doing with that money, right, and he's going out and he's spending, and you know, the movie, the next scene is the father's like, how can I leave my business to you, you're going to squander it all away, and you know, it can happen in families, it can happen that you just retire, and the business is taken over by the next president, and everything that you put your life into, your life's work, 50 years, right, of not coming home, and if you look Pasuk of Gimel, I love this pasuk because it was many, many years before corporate America. Ki kol yamav machovim b'kas inyano gam b'layla lo shachav libo gam ze havel, right? Today we can relate to it incredibly, because how many people who have parents that are in fields that no matter what we do, it's what the boss demands, right? It's not what we want to be doing. We don't want to be working 15 hours a day. We don't want to, especially as women today, when many women do have to work to help to support their families, even if they wanted to spend more time at home, right? That, you know, you have the nanny putting the kid to bed. You have the nanny picking the kid up from God. You have so many things. And that causes us, when that's not where you want to be, right? When you want to be in bed, when you want to be able to go to the ballet recital, when you want to be able to eat dinner with your family every night of the week instead of only on Shabbos, that causes anger. That causes sadness. And it is something which is existent in this world. It's not like he's making this up, right? And as we know, it's not even something that we many times have control over, right? Anybody whose parents, right, one of their parents is a doctor or a lawyer, you don't have a choice. There are certain fields, especially today, the last 10 years that you've grown up, the world has changed from an economic perspective, right? So we can relate to this in a very, very, very close way. Life is not simple. You go into Perek Dalet, Vara'iti, Pasuk Dalet, Ani et kol amal ve et kol kishron ha-ma'aseh, ki hi kin'at ish meri'ehu. You look around and you say, I mean, hopefully it's not so much in the Jewish world, but certainly in the regular world, there are many times when people are motivated by jealousy. What makes me want to get to the top of my class? Not just because I want to get a good grade, because every good mother says to their child, do the best that you can do, right? Oh, I love you, you're trying so hard, right? But what? We want to get the best because we want to one-up someone else, because I want to be valedictorian, because I want to be in Harvard Law Review, because I, right, have to build my resume, so I'm going to be the one that gets into medical school, right? It's over someone else. And this also is something which the world, for whatever the reason, and I know that Rabbi Twersky spoke about Cain and Hevel, so I assume that he touched upon that, so therefore there is no coincidence that the world, that's the word which is continually used is Hevel, Hevel, each time, and the jealousy that is an underlying factor. But this is only one aspect of what it is that Kohelet speaks about in terms of all of the different issues that go on with the Amelut. And therefore, without reading, we're going to skip the next couple of sources because I don't want to take too much time. I think the idea is very, very clear that we live in a world, as he says in Kohelet Perek Vav Pasuk Zayin, towards the second to last source, where it says, "Kol amal ha'adam lepihu v'gam ha'nefesh lo timalei." Any person who is spiritually sensitive, right? When you are spiritually sensitive, and it doesn't make a difference if you're Jewish, not Jewish, religious, less religious, observant, let's use that word instead of religious, I'm not really sure how we want to use the word religious, right? But observant and whatnot, when you have a spiritual side to you, when you have greater goals, what you realize is there's something missing. When we live in a rat race, when what it is that we're running from appointment to appointment, and every person is more jealous than the next, and you know, you're working in a law firm and your senior, this person above you, is the one that's taking credit for all of your work so that he can get the promotion. And you have to wait until you get to that position so that you can piggyback on somebody else's work so you can get the promotion. Because we live in a world that, unfortunately, for whatever the reasons, we're not getting into that now, but many, many, many times when left to go just by natural forces is used in a way where people manipulate, where people try to hurt each other. And that is something that causes us to be very frustrated in our own efforts to succeed. Okay. The next source, Kohelet Perek Zayin, we see something very interesting. And within Kohelet, there's a fascinating study, those of you who will learn it this year, those of you who don't have time to learn it this year, maybe do it on your own, because it is an unbelievable work, and we'll have to talk a drop about why it is that Shlomo HaMelech writes it this way, an unbelievable work in confronting the world that we live in a way that forces us to actually contemplate what the meaning of our life is. People tend to look at this sefer and say, ugh, it's just so negative, it's so depressing, right? I teach once a week in a Baal Tshuva school, so just a funny thing. She, you know, an older, late 20s, whatever, woman who was like, my therapist would definitely not like this safer, right? It's all this negative energy. And, you know, everyone there shares about everything, and, you know, they're all growing, and she really gave me a hassle. Why is it here? I had to explain to her why it's here. There's a method to the madness, right? Which is that there's also the answers that are found within, but more so, when somebody throws at you all this stuff, right? You know, this isn't good, and this isn't good, and that isn't good. And certainly once you begin to read and understand the style, he's not necessarily saying it in a definitive way. He's asking a question, or he's making you contemplate, is this true? He's making you say, well, one second, if this is what happens with work, and if this is what jealousy can bring you to, an intelligent person begins to say to themselves, well, one second, how am I going to be different? How am I going to make the other parts of Kohelet work? How does this fit into the overall realm of Torah, where we know that jealousy is wrong, and we know that, you know, taking something that's not yours is incorrect, etc., etc.? So we can also find the answers within. And what does he say? Levad re'ei zeh matzati asher asah ha'elokim et ha'adam yashar v'hema bikshu cheshbonot rabim. I love this pasuk, right? I always say mind over matter, right? That we have so many, we create our own issues. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't realities, that the same way that the Gemara tells us, Hakol bidei shamayim, chutz meyira shamayim, and Rashi and Tosfot both explain there, what does that mean? That means that God, I like this one, creates you short. Where's some of my friends, and my tall friends, Gabriella, uh-oh, we're going to see who's not here now, Gabriella, Ariella, where are my tall, oh, there we go, my tall friend, she created her tall, created me short, created somebody dark, created somebody light, created somebody wealthy, and it's true. We all know that we're born into different homes, we're born into different situations, and therefore there isn't equality in that sense, right? Hashem gives us what it is that we need for our own tachlis. He creates us yashar. He creates us in the space that we are supposed to be in. Ah, what's wrong with man? V'hema bikshu cheshbonot rabim. We're always trying to work the system. We're always trying to say, no, but it's not supposed to be like this. And we're always saying, but, you know, and there are different explanations of what this pasuk could mean. We could also say it in interpretation in terms of Torah, that the Torah gives us a path, gives us a yashra, gives us halacha, gives us a way to be able to interact with the world, to be able to interact with each other. V'hema bikshu cheshbono rabim. That doesn't apply to me. This doesn't really make a difference right now. This is something that I don't have to, you know, contemplate, etc., etc. Now, the Chazal tell us, the Gemara says, that this pasuk also relates directly to Adam HaRishon. And how does it relate to Adam HaRishon? For those of you that have, you know, learned a bit about the chait, the original chait of Adam HaRishon, we know that Adam was in a bit of a quandary, right? He's given the command, and if you flip over the page and Sefer Bereishit, the second source, Perek Bet, it says, right? I'm not going to go through, because now is not the time to do an analysis of this part of Bereishit, but just on a conceptual level, we know that Adam HaRishon comes into a world where there was a certain level, as the Ramban explains and others, clarity, right? Clarity, the same way as it's explained, there was Emet and Sheker, right? That there was truth and non-truth. The same way that I'm sure everybody or most of you at least drive, hopefully. If you don't drive, you will, God willing, get your licenses as soon as your parents let you or whatever it is, right? We all know that when we come to a red light, what do we do?
Stop.
Right. We know actually before we even turn on the motor, what do?
Put our seatbelts on,
which was not the case when those of us who are 40 and up, you know, we're driving. It's very strange to actually think that in those days you didn't have to wear seatbelts. I don't know. It's bizarre when you think of it. Okay, but okay, right? You know that that's MS. MS is, right? It's true, but it is proven that if you go through a red light, what may very well happen to you? God forbid, you could get into an accident. Lo aleinu chas v'shalom. Don't say, you know, whatever. What happened? What's going on, Bressler? What's, you okay over there? Oh, get a ticket. Okay. That's the least of my worry. But why do we have red lights that we stop at? Because from a logical, intellectually clear perspective, if you go through a red light, Right? It's there to save your life the same way that a seatbelt is there to save your life. Okay? And therefore, it's not a matter of good or bad, as the Ramban would say, because, okay, of course, not a lot of people. I love cab drivers in Israel. There's a law, I don't know why, but if you drive a cab, you're not obligated to wear a seatbelt. Not sure what that means. Okay, but, you know, I'll ask, you know, like, where my kids, when they were little, like, Mommy, why isn't he wearing a seatbelt? And I'm like, good question. Israeli law is sometimes really weird, but okay, whatever. But it defies all logic. Right, it defies all logic. Why? Because you know the same way that if you put your hand in fire, you're going to get burned. You could. You had free choice. Adam HaRishon had free choice. He could have put his hand in the fire. He was supposed to choose not. Right? Because putting your hand in the fire meant that he was going to get burned. Because b'yom ha'chacham mimenu motamut. Now, he chose, though, to eat. V'hema b'kshu cheshbonot rabim. So I had Shana Bet over, and we talked about this for a drop, and I'm sure some of you have heard this, and if not, you can look it up. Michtam Eliyahu brings it in a very simple Hebrew and whatnot. Michtam Eliyahu explains, and others also, but his is the most concise, that when he talks about the sin of the Eitz Hadat, that this was an Avera Lishma. What was the Avera Lishma? What was the Hema Bikshu Cheshbonot Rabim? That, what does it mean to be Yashar? It means it's right in front of me. It's simple. One step in front of another step in front of another step, right? So sometimes I'll have a student which will complain about a particular class, and it's like, I don't have to think too much. It's all right in front of me. I'll say, well, do you know the information? So that's not the point. It's just, it's not complicated. It's not complex. It's not leaving me with the question of the meaning of life or whatever. Okay, I hear that. And it is important at times to question and to contemplate and to be confused and to wonder about the meaning of life. But you know what? You have to have yashar first. You have to know what's right. You have to know what's wrong. And what Adam HaRishon did in this quote-unquote Avera Lishma was try to bring more meaning into his life. He tried to make his life more difficult so that he could find a greater level of significance in his choices. Right? Because when things are blurred, what do I have? I then have the excitement of the pursuit. When I want to figure out why do people like Sudoku, why do people like certain mind teasers, right? Because I have a problem in front of me, and I got to figure out the answer. But if it was clear, if the answer was right there, if it was just fire or not, it's not very exciting. It's not very interesting. And therefore, the Avera Lishma was that Adam HaRishon wanted to add a certain level of challenge to this world, right? He was on level 1. He wanted to get to level 10. The only problem was that Hashem said, when you get to level 10, if you get to level 10, you're going to die. For whatever the reasons, we're not going to get into that now. Into Kabbalah. And even though there are some of us over 40 here, we're not doing Kabbalah tonight. Tonight, maybe a few more years, but not tonight. Okay. So, he wanted that challenge, but that challenge came along with death. Now, it's very interesting, because death is ultimately the thing that from a philosophical plane is the cause, I know it's late, follow me, is the cause of our motivation to find meaning in life. Why is that? I see that you're paying attention. Why is that? Why is death ultimately, or the idea of death, the motivation for us wanting to find the cause to the meaning in life? You're not Bethany. That's English. You are. It is Bethany. Oh, yeah, you! Yeah, you keep looking at me like you're ignoring me. I was like, maybe it's Bethany. Yes, why? Why is death? Why? It's been away for a few days. It's my brain. No, I'm not asking Goodkin. I'm asking you, right? Why is death the motivation for finding the meaning in life? Somebody else, if I...
Time pressure.
Time pressure. Meaning what? Explain. Long sentences. Let's not do... We're not SNSing now.
You have a limited time to live, so of course you want to figure out what the point of it is before
you die. In other words, we don't know whether or not we're going to be here, God willing. We will be here on Mayav Esrim. But tomorrow, a month from now, a year from now, 10 years from now, right? And it's always fascinating to me. You meet... There's a psychology of older people. It's like you say to yourself, now maybe I can say this because I'm only in my 40s, but like, you're 78 years old. God willing, you will live longer, but it's okay to rest. It's okay to not want to redesign your house. It's okay. And some of us have relatives like this, probably. I mean, I do, but I'm sure you do too, where the next challenge, the next this. And on one hand, yes, we know keeping active keeps the mind, you know, keeps the mind going and keeps older people healthy, et cetera, et cetera. But from a Torah perspective, right, there has to be a certain perspective that we take in our understanding that although we are trying to find meaning, you have to realize you're not taking it with you. Right now, meaning sometimes is translated into making a lot of money, having a lot of prestige. Rav Bowman, Alav HaShalom, who was one of the founders of Or Sameach Yeshiva, gave a few shiurim that I was able to hear on tape about Shir HaShirim. And he says something very, very interesting on the second pasuk, Yishakini Minishiko Pihu Ki Tovim Dodecha Miyayin, that what it is that Klai Yisrael desires is to have the kiss of his mouth, because the wine, his kiss, is sweeter, Tovim Dodecha Miyayin, than wine. And he said that this is representative of, and the whole story is representative of an existential yearning of every Jew, right, from the neshama of the Jew, that we want that greatest relationship, right? We want that feeling of inspiration. He said it's the warmth of the wine, which can be inspiration, which can be spirituality. And he says the following, he says that's very nice when we had a world, right, if you understand how Chazal view this as the, you know, as our desire to come close to Hashem. And there were many thousands of years where the vast majority of Jews wanted that. That was their desire, to go back to the place of Matan Torah, to go back to that place of clarity, intellectual clarity, spiritual clarity. He said, but we live in a world today where there are more Jews who are assimilated than not. And we have more people, they still have a neshama, right? So where is that? If Chazal say that this is the existential yearning of a Jewish person, how does that get translated in the world that we live in today? And he says something beautiful. And we know this. This is one of the sources of anti-Semitism, unfortunately. Take every field. Take nuclear weapons, nuclear energy. Take the arts, right? What was the name of the people that started the movie? Gershwin and, what am I thinking? Come on, Gershwin and the people that started Hollywood. Okay, they're all Jews. Levi Strauss, right? Marx, they're Jews, right? You go back, what? Who? Okay, you go back and you take all major fields. And you have, and this is one of those statistics, it's Mark Twain, it's, you know, you can go Google it, that for the amount of Jews that we are in terms of the percentage of the world, right, we have the highest level of Nobel Prizes, like we're like 0.2, and yet we get 7 or I don't know how many percent, I should have like thought about it, but I just thought about this thought now, right, I should have like looked it up before, but we are so many hundreds of times over represented in all different fields. Why? Yishakeni minishiko piu. Because there is a neshama which is striving to succeed. Right? There is this idea on a very high existential, spiritual level that maybe we can't even understand, that from the moment of Adam HaRishon's sin, every neshama is trying to come back to some level of perfection, to some level of wholeness, to some level of completion, to reach that peak of meaning in life. Now, you and I are lucky that our parents or our grandparents or wherever in the generation brought us into Torah. But what about the people that never had that? What happened to the Yosef Mendelovitches that weren't Yosef Mendelovich? Right? They still had that yearning, and that yearning tries to be focused on something else. And therefore, when we live in the physical world, we are living in a world where we are continually trying to succeed. And yet this success is something, or the pursuit of success is that which frustrates us. Because at the end of the day, people may not remember. And at the end of the day, we may not live forever. Or for sure, we know that we don't live forever. And that brings us to the cycle that we're in right now. The other name, and obviously the reason why we're talking about Kohelet, I know you all know, is because we read Kohelet on Sukkot. I think I mentioned that, but just in case I didn't. But we know that Sukkot is a very interesting holiday. It's an interesting holiday for many reasons. I'm just going to take one aspect. Anybody who looked through the Mishnayot that talk about how you build a sukkah, and everybody knows this as halacha, I assume, that you have to take, in order to build your sukkah, in order to have schach, you have to have things that were once alive, but are no longer attached to the earth. So that if you have a grapevine, which normally weaves in and out of your pergola, you know, your wooden slat thing that you have on your porch, it's very nice, but it will passel your sukkah until you cut off the vine from the, its original source on the earth. And that same, that's all that one moment motion does. You cut, and you can now use your grapevine in theory as schach, but until you cut, as long as it's still attached to life, you can't. Which is very strange when you contemplate it. We take a lulav and an esrog, we take those elements which are directly connected to agriculture, and we walk around. Well, at least those of you who, even if you went to shul, I don't think you'd be walking around unless you were in an egalitarian minion, because the men walk around, right? The men walk around the bima. I guess you could walk around the women's section, you know, but they walk around. Okay, it's okay. I'm not making fun. I'm just saying, you know, you make the bracha, the men walk around with the lulav and the esrog. We're going around in cycles. We're doing seven, right? I'm not going to get into, everybody understands that all of these things are meaningful on some level. But we have to ask ourselves why, right? Why? Now, it's also very, very interesting that in terms of the time of the year that we are in, we know, and I understand that Rabbi Liebtag spoke about this extensively, that we are not specifically within the time frame, if we were commemorating going into Sukkot and just doing the physical act, like on Hanukkah, we are commemorating the menorah oil which was found, we do it on Chafei Kislev. Why? Because that's when it happened. If we wanted to commemorate the specific time when we went into Tabernacles, when we went into Sukkot, when would we have Sukkot? We would have Sukkot Pesach time, but we don't. We specifically do it at a time when the weather, right, is beginning, although this is absolutely crazy, it was like a record in Israel. It never rains in September, certainly not this time of year. It's really weird, but okay, but it's normally a little later, and God is showing us that, no, we're getting into a season where rain is coming, where winter is coming. What is winter? Winter is ultimately the time where the world goes to sleep. It's a time when there's hibernation. It's a time when, in terms of death and decay, on the natural level, now is when it begins. If you have a beautiful flower garden, right, the saddest part about winter is that your flowers don't bloom anymore. Right? I love flowers, right? They disappear, they shrivel up, everything goes away, right? If we were, what's the groundhog, right? You go under, and the first day of spring, when it comes up, and it's like, oh, it's getting warm, right? Whatever. But now we're in a time also of death, right? We're in a time of death. We're in a time where the cycle is beginning to tell us, we finished with the harvest, we finished with growth, we're cutting everything down. It's Chag HaAsif. What's the other word that Asif means? V'asaf El Amav. It's a word for death. The idea of ingathering, that you gather in the harvest, but it's also that when a human being, Admei Ve'esrom, goes back to his creator, it is V'yasaf Elamav, it says that he is gathered back to his nation. It means, it's a euphemism for death. And therefore, what we celebrate in Sukkot is space. We celebrate mindset. We celebrate a reality where we go outside. And when we go outside, we're obviously supposed to be thinking about certain things. So what first comes to your mind when you're sleeping outdoors underneath, depending upon where you live, pine needles or palm thong? No, palm fronds? What's the word? Well, palm leaves or whatever they're called, right? What do you think first? What do you think? Come on, do the pine needles, those of you that used to use pine for your schach, right? You smell, right? I love sukkahs because it's like we use
bamboo.
But there's a certain smell of bamboo, right? There's also a smell that you smell that you're outside. When you sleep in the sukkah, you wake up in the middle of the night, right? What do you hear? It's a little weird, but you're hearing the dogs or you hear a bat. In the morning, you're hearing the birds. What does that remind you of? Right? Nature. It reminds you, you feel like it's like camping. I love camping. Anybody want to camp outdoors under the stars this year instead of staying in a youth hostel? We'll talk later, right? But
yeah,
when you camp, what does it allow you to do? It allows you to feel connected to nature. And why would we want to feel connected to nature right now? So we understand also, in the same way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has us have Sukkot now, what it is that he wants from us is to remind us who is our creator on the simplest level. But you didn't have to have a whole shiur to hear that, because I think that that's sort of obvious. There's another aspect of Sukkot in addition to feeling close to nature, and we're gonna put it together in a second, which is that we're told that everything that we have on the inside, we have to bring on the outside. We're actually told to go out. We're told to go out of our normal dwelling. We're told to go out of our comfort zone, because even though in some ways camping out is really nice, it's not as comfortable. It could be cold, and specifically that is what the Mefarshim explained to us as to why it is that we do it now. We do it now because we need to realize that it may not be so comfortable. It would have been easy to camp out in April or May. It is not easy to camp out right now. But when we camp out, it makes us realize that we are not always in control. But there's something else. Visually, consciously, when you leave your environment, right, what does it make you do? Why are tiyulim so awesome and great? And I'm not just saying that because I'm in charge, right? But why are they so awesome and great? What does it give us from our normal life? What does going on a hike give you from your normal life? A what?
A break.
A break from? Okay, well, great. Oh, you're not doing such a good job, right? But when you forget, even in seminary, why do people go to the ocean? Why do people go to the mountains? What do they want to get other than, okay, a nice view? Today we have HD, right? We could have a screen this big and you can sit here and you could be looking at the mountains and you could feel like you're in the mountains. 3D also. I mean, what are you missing? Why do we go out? Why do we want to get our kids off the computer and go outside and play?
It's nice to have a change
of
scenery.
We want them experience a change of scenery. What does a change of scenery do for you?
Think.
Makes you think. Oh, unplug the earphones, get rid of the iPhone, right? Which is why when you go on a teal, you shouldn't be plugged in. But what does it make you think about?
That's like out of body experience. I don't know.
Oh, out of body experience. Okay, halavai. It means Tiuli must have been really good last year if we had out of body experiences. Right?
Yeah.
But okay. What? Come on, guys. I know you know this. Because if you haven't experienced it, then we're going to have to...
Well, you play the metaphor game.
Well,
it's a rhetoric game.
Yes.
That makes you think.
The man game.
We're basic. Who goes to the beach? Okay, forget God. We don't have to be religious. I mean, we're not forgetting Hashem.
What's on your mind? Your mood? Your life?
Why? But why?
It's not routine.
Because when you're busy every day doing the same thing, whether or not if it's at a time of life when you're in school or when you're changing diapers or when you're working in an accountant's office or you're running errands and, you know, juggling between going grocery shopping and making dinner for your kids and again, doing this, doing that, you don't have time to think. You don't have time to introspect. You don't have time to question, why am I here and what am I doing? Why is that important? I mean, I should hope you realize that's important. I mean, right? It's important. Why is it important?
How can you grow without thinking?
Because how can you grow without thinking? How can you actually be a real human being without questioning, what am I here for? Where am I going? Where is this taking me? Where is this taking me? It's almost as if we spend all of our lives, and everybody at their own stage, we spend our lives trying to become, right? When you're little, I want to be big, right? Because you have that big sister, and I want to be able to, like, it's like the kid trying to reach the cookie jar, right? I'm going to be tall enough one day to reach the cookie jar. And then you're in kindergarten, and you just want to be able to write. I don't know if anybody has these recollections, right? You just want to be able to write, and you want to be able to read. And then you learn how to read, and you want to be able to do the next thing. And then, you know, you're 10, and you want to be able to go on that ride at Disneyland. And you just got to get a little taller. And I don't think I can reach half of them anyways, and I'm already a grown woman, right? But, and then you want to be able to drive, and then you want to be able to go to college, and then you want to be able to be the top of your class, and then you want to get the job. It doesn't stop, let alone having to make enough money to pay for tuitions, et cetera, et cetera, right? And we're continually, trying to become something. We rarely in our life allow ourselves to just be. And part of what Sukkot gives us, right, is that opportunity to sort of say, stop, I'm getting off the roller coaster, I'm leaving it all inside, I'm going out. Now, why is that going out important specifically where we are? And also, just notice, it's like a harvesting of self. You continually are being mashkia, you're continually investing in yourself. in your career, in your education, and good things. Don't get me wrong. I hope nobody's walking away thinking that I think that these things are not good. This is life, right? Life is paying for tuition at my stage of life, right? Life at your stage of life is going to school and gaining as much as you can, right? And at the next stage of life, it's, you know, whatever it is. Okay, but we're continually occupied in the do, in the run, and as Kohelet tells us, sometimes that's wrought with a lot of challenges. And yet, it's very fascinating, in our cycle of the holidays, right, we've had Rosh Hashanah, we've had Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah makes us realize that we have a God in the world and that we have to serve Him, again, on one foot, much more complex. Yom Kippur makes us say that the physical world is wrought with dangers. We continually are all chaiting, and we have to have the chamesha tinuyim because we have to take away our ta'avot, because we have to strip ourselves of all of that chitzoniut and all of those things that cause us to fall into the pit of sin, our yetzahara. And therefore we get rid of all of those things and we do teshuvah for all of our deeds. But you know what? It's unbelievable. 3 days later, we have Zman Simchatenu. And when you actually were to stop to think from a philosophical perspective, it's like, whoa, I still have a hard time. I'm not a person that has a hard time transitioning. But this transition from that seriousness of just thinking about who you are spiritually and what you've done wrong and how you need to change and what you need to do differently and again, the stripping away of all of those layers, and turning around and like, l'shana ba, you know, whatever. And then being in a sukkah, it's hard. It's very, very hard. But when you really understand sukkahs, what you realize is that it doesn't have to be that hard. Because ultimately what sukkahs does is it says, you know what? You do live in a physical world. Embrace physicality. Embrace the basics, though. We live in a world where we have all that extra stuff. Go out with your nicest things. Go out with the things that you would, if you had to pack the bag, right? That's why we don't bring pots. Who's going to bring their old Farberware pots? No one, right? You bring your nice china. You bring the things that mean the most to you of the physical world. And in Eretz Yisrael, I hope you had that experience, even though it did rain, but most people, they bring in their couches, and it's like, it's an unbelievable experience when you see people that, like, really keep sukkahs. Most of the time in Chutz Laaretz, it's just too hard because of safety, because of cold weather. You know, I'm not blaming anybody. It's just it's just too hard to, it's a, you know, or impossible to do it. Here we go out into the nature and we say to ourselves, what are our lives really about? We're forced to become more consciously aware, but we become consciously aware specifically through understanding that life cycle. So if you look towards the bottom of page 2, where it says Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph, it says Tov Shemi Shemen Tov V'Yom HaMavet MiYom Hivaldo. An unbelievable pasuk. Better is a good name than good oil, and the day of death than the day of birth. And people say, oh my gosh, so depressing. V'Yom HaMavet MiYom Hivaldo. But it's not true when you think about it, because what does the Yom HaMavet do? What does death ultimately allow us to do? Death is an ingathering. Death is a reality which allows us to take a measure of what our accomplishments were. What were we really? Tov shemi shemen tov. When a person has kept mitzvah, when a person has done chesed, when a person has tried to be the best that they can, when a person is working not only on tikkun atzmi, but on tikkun olam, in terms of making the world a better place, right? Then when that person dies, of course it's sad. Admeyeva Esrim. Of course it's sad. But you know what you say? You say, for this person the world was created. For this person who filled their life with meaning and significance and understood the difference between what was real and what was fake, from what was Hevel and what was Emet. Right? For that person, the world was created, and it is only at a time of Sukkot. Again, Chaval, we didn't have this before, but I'll tie it into Shmini Atzeres, right? And then I'll end. But the Sukkot is supposed to be the vehicle through which we go out. We find Simcha because we connect to the basics in life. It's similar to, Chas v'Shalom, if a person ever had a bladder infection or was in the hospital for something that has to do with their, you know, internal organs, and they couldn't go to the bathroom, or they couldn't eat. wow, the first time you can go to the bathroom, the first, I had a C-section, right, they don't let you eat for 2 days, the first time you could do the things that you normally are so used to do, you've never made such an asher yatzar with such kavana. Why? Because the most basic things in life become significant. Spend, you want the biggest musar in your life? Read a book, read a memoir of, God forbid, someone dying. Go visit a person in the hospital who has a terminal illness. And you walk away saying, everything else in my life is little. Okay, so I had a fight with this sibling. Okay, let's make up. Let's make it work. So I lost a little bit of money. You know what? I'm alive. I'm healthy. I have lots of other things. I'll make more money one day. Because it makes you understand what our lives can really be. And ultimately, this has directly to do with Shmini Atzeres. So I don't want to take the time to read inside, but if you look at the last page, right, you can read it on your own, but there's a discussion in Psachim as to what the nature of Yom Tov is supposed to be, whether or not it is Kulo LaHashem or Kulo Lachem. And the discussion in the Gemara, the statement in the Gemara is that everybody understands, right, that ultimately, on Atzeret, and again, there's a drash here and whatever it is, but that Atzeret, which is Shmini Atzeret, which Chazal tell us, is ultimately about the fact that on Sukkot we were bringing karbanot for all of, I'm doing this very much so the kids are, but on Sukkot we had all of the karbanot and all of the avodah that didn't only include Klal Yisrael but also included the goyim, and that's why we bring Shivim Parim, etc., etc. And it comes to the very end, and Hashem says, this was so wonderful, the party was great, but now I just want you and me. Right now I just want us to be able to have, the Gemara does not say this here, right? But the concept, right, which is brought down in Chazal, is the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu just wants to be able to have Shmini Atzeret is the time when we are just going to be alone with Hashem. And therefore, this idea that when you think about the fact that we've had we were sitting in the Sukkah, and we had the Lulav, we had the Esrog, we had all of these things, and now Shmini Atzeret, it also turned into Simchas Torah. What do? We just dance, we eat, we enjoy ourselves, right? We enjoy ourselves because what this is another little idea of, okay, it's just you and me, God, right? I understand that after this whole process, where ultimately, where Sukkot was supposed to bring me to was a true communion with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with a true communion with those things which are most dear to me. And ultimately, that is the relationship that we have with God. It is the relationship that we try to build, right, with the world around us through the Torah. And ultimately, that cannot come about if we don't take time for conscious awareness, if we don't take time for introspection, if we don't take time to take, literally, harvest our deeds, harvest your thoughts, harvest your time. What was this about? Take stock in your own reality. Which is ultimately, we think about the way we say stock, which means money today, but the stock was what we grew, what we created, right? What we were so busy with the whole year. And I think that's actually a good way to begin the year, meaning for us especially, because this is something that as you will go through your year, I certainly find this in my own life, you get so busy with stuff. You gotta take time. You gotta take time to step away. You have to take time to say to yourself, what does it all mean to me? How am I going to use this? Where am I going to put it? So even though you only have till tomorrow in the Sukkah, take some time in the Sukkah, enjoy nature, right? Enjoy what the Sukkah means. Certainly tonight, as it also relates to Din, and in terms of finishing up of the cycle of our Teshuvah process, without this conscious awareness, we don't have Teshuvah, right? We may have Vidoy, but we certainly don't have Teshuvah. How can, without being conscious awareness, the last two sources you can go and look on your own, because Rabbi Manning is getting me nervous now, but you know, without that ability to be able to say, what is my life about, where is it that I'm going, etc., etc., you ultimately will never know what you have. So everyone should have a nice Hoshana Rabbah, everyone should have a good petek, as we say, and a wonderful chag. Thank you. Mm-hmm.